So in this first session on God and Science, I'm going to be talking about cosmology. But before I get onto cosmology, just one or two general remarks about this whole enterprise of bringing Christian faith into relationship with science. I'm not trying to prove the existence of God on the basis of science. I don't think God can be proved or disproved on the basis of science. So it would be hopeless for me, I think, as a Christian priest to try and offer a scientific proof of God. I think it's equally hopeless for an atheist to try and offer a scientific disproof of God. God is a transcendent being and doesn't lend himself to the kind of scientific inquiry that can lead to a definite conclusion one way or the other. But having said that, it is possible to coordinate modern science with what Christians believe about God, and it's that kind of coordination that I'll be engaged on in these 3 weeks. And I believe that when you do that, then it actually turns out to be quite a fruitful coordination. And as modern science has proceeded, it's actually got, it's opened up in a way that's made this coordination increasingly fruitful and plausible. And in the end, at the end of this process, well, we perhaps haven't got to the end of it, but the result of this process is that belief in God is looking quite plausible from a scientific point of view. Not something that you can prove, but the coordination goes sufficiently well that it's at least a very plausible point of view. Scientifically, I believe that there is a God. The idea that there's a kind of conflict between science and religion is actually, in some ways, a relatively recent idea. Well, relatively recent. I think the first book about this conflict between science and religion was published in 1875. It's an idea of the latter part of the 19th century. And it's intertwined with the controversies about Darwin's Origin of Species. I'll come to that in a fortnight's time. But I think prior to that, there wasn't really much idea that science and religion were in conflict with one another. Most people think that modern science really got going in the 17th century, and I think that's a near enough correct idea. And some of the early scientists, some of the people who are still recognised as very great scientists, like Isaac Newton, were doing their science in an explicitly religious framework. Some people try to put it about that modern science needs to kind of make atheist assumptions, that you can only do science from a kind of atheist point of view. Clearly, historically, that's not true. That's not what great scientists like Newton were doing. So I think there's a historical kind of riposte to that idea that science has to be atheist. And then there's another kind of argument that atheist scientists sometimes put forward, that scientifically you can't prove God. Scientifically, you don't need such a complex idea as that there is a God. You can try and explain everything more simply in purely naturalistic terms. And I think that's got a little bit more plausibility to it. But my answer to that is that assuming that there isn't a God is as much a kind of background assumption as assuming that there is a God. And I don't think either of them can be proved from science. I think they're both plausible kind of background assumptions when you come to science. And I think there can be a fruitful connection between science and Christianity. Also, I'm happy to admit, a fruitful connection between science and atheism. I'm not denying that prominent atheist scientists like Richard Dawkins have a tune to play. They have. But I think Christians who are interested in science have a plausible tune to play as well. And in the end, it's a matter of judgment which of these to go with. It's not a matter of proof. Neither of them is ridiculous. They're both worth entertaining seriously. So that's my kind of background position, and I'll come back to those general issues about science and religion in the course of this short series of talks, and we can pick up some of that in the discussion if you'd like to. But let me come to cosmology. There was a very important development in cosmology in the post-war years when fairly conclusive evidence was brought forward to support a Big Bang theory of the origin of the world. Before that, there'd been really two rival theories of, I think, about equal plausibility scientifically. One is the so-called steady state theory of the universe, that the universe had kind of always existed, hadn't come into being at any particular point of time, it was just there, an ongoing fact of life. The other was that the universe had come into being through some kind of momentary explosion, a Big Bang that had brought it into being. What settled it really was the discovery of background radiation in the universe that was exactly what you would expect on the Big Bang hypothesis. And most scientists did think that settled things in favour of the Big Bang theory. It was interesting how that was received from a religious and from an atheist point of view. And I think there was, with hindsight, perhaps a bit more excitement about that than there should have been. On the atheist side, Fred Hoyle had long resisted the Big Bang idea and wanted to cling to steady state, partly because he thought that the Big Bang theory would point towards God. It would point to a definite moment in time when the universe had come into being, and that was much too much like what the book of Genesis was saying. So as an atheist science, he was quite resistant to the Big Bang theory and turned out to be wrong. And the Pope of the day, Pope Pius the something, I can never quite remember the number of the Pius, is it the 12th or something? I never remember. But the Pope Pius, who was Bishop of Rome at the time, was also making a link between the Big Bang theory and religious faith, and he thought it showed, as he put it, that the universe had a mighty beginning in time, and this was entirely consistent with what Christians had always been saying and supportive of it. I think they were both really getting a bit ahead of themselves, and it's not quite so clear as they initially imagined that the Big Bang theory suggests a definite beginning of the universe in time. And one of the reasons why that's more complicated than it first seemed was pointed out by Stephen Hawking in his celebrated book, A Brief History of Time. It is, as many people have said, a book that many more people have on their shelves than have actually read. It's not an enormously readable book, but it has been much discussed. And Hawking's clever point, really, is that you don't get time until you get matter. Time and matter are really interlinked, and it's a sort of, and time is a kind of spin-off of matter. So it's only when you get a material universe that you start to get anything that we can recognize as time. Before the universe comes into being, there is just nothing there, and there is no time. So it's a mistake, Hawking says, to say that the universe comes into being at a definite point in time. No, it doesn't, because there is no time until the universe comes into existence. He says it's if you go to the North Pole, you can't say where North is, because at the North Pole, North is no longer defined. You can no longer say North is there, because you're kind of at the North Pole. And I think Hawking is saying that the point at which the universe comes into being is like that sort of North Pole, and once you get to that extreme, you've no longer got any time, so you can't say that the universe came into being at a particular point in time. It's a rather subtle point, perhaps. It wasn't actually an original point that Stephen Hawking was making there, and I don't think he was completely aware of this, but it was a point that St. Augustine had made in the 4th century. Augustine was clearly a very bright fellow, and had there been Nobel Prizes at the time, I think Augustine might have got one. I'm not sure I agree with Augustine about everything, but he clearly was very smart, and I think it is a significant achievement to anticipate the Stephen Hawking's point about time and the origin of the universe by about 1,500 years just by thinking it through without any scientific data. And his point is exactly the same one, that there is no time until you get creation, so you can't say that God created the universe in time, because it's only when you get creation that you get time. And that's actually been what people have generally thought over the centuries, St. Augustine. And the main person who departed from this view, and I think his ideas still sort of linger on in the back of the mind somewhere, the main person who departed from this view was Isaac Newton, who I've already mentioned, who had this idea that there was a kind of container universe, that there were absolute dimensions of space and time, a sort of space-time framework within which the universe came into being. And I think that is the picture that a lot of people have in the back of their minds, and Hawking was getting rid of that picture. And though I don't think he knew it at the time, he was getting back to what St. Augustine had been saying long before Isaac Newton. So I think the upshot of all that is that both Fred Hoyle and the Pope of the day were getting a bit of the head of themselves in thinking that there was the Big Bang Theory implied that the universe came into existence at a particular point in time, and even more in thinking that that led to religious conclusions. I don't think Fred Hoyle need have feared that, and I think Pope Pius was probably pushing the boat out a bit in trying to claim credit for Christianity on the basis of that. Big Bang Theory doesn't actually imply a definite beginning in time in the way that's often assumed. But this idea is quite widely thought, and in the preface to Hawking's Brief History of Time, there's a rather trenchant anti-religious preface by Carl Sagan, who says that if the universe is completely self-contained, having no boundary or edge, what place then for a creator? And I think this idea is sort of pretty widely, it has quite a wide currency, that if there is no definite beginning, then you don't need a creator. I think it just doesn't follow. So far, I think it's neither Christians nor atheists are really scoring much of a point on the basis of Big Bang Theory. It's a scientific development, very interesting in itself, but one that isn't as much of a goal for the Christian side as Pope Pius thought and as Fred Hoyle feared. Then we come on next to an idea that's been put forward by another prominent atheist science, Peter Atkins, who was long teaching chemistry in Oxford. I think he's retired now, who has an interesting idea that the universe is what he calls elegantly reorganized nothing. It's a nice phrase, I think. Elegantly reorganized nothing. What does he mean by that? Well, I think you don't need enormous scientific sophistication to get some idea what he's talking about. Einstein produced an equation connecting matter and energy. And I think one of Atkin's ideas is that the universe, which seems to be so solid and material, that you, I mean, if you knock up against it, it just seems full of hard stuff. This is actually just reorganized energy. That I think that's the one of the core ideas that comes out of Einstein and is, in its way, pretty widely accepted. And this energy that's organized in a way that seems to produce hard matter, this is partly positive energy and partly negative energy. And if you cancel the two out, then you're left with nothing. So I think that's the essence of Peter Atkin's idea that the universe is, as he puts it, elegantly reorganized nothing. He thinks that's an argument for atheism, but I'm not sure that it is. I don't see quite why it should be an argument for atheism, and I think, again, you can sort of bat this both ways round. I mean, if you're looking at this from a Christian point of view, if you start out assuming that there is a God who has brought the universe into being, then you can easily play the old-fashioned game that sort of Enlightenment natural theologians used to play, of saying how marvelous it is that God should bring the universe into being in this way. He didn't need to start with anything. He could start with nothing at all, and out of nothing create this very solid-seeming universe. What a remarkable achievement that is. So it seems to me that if you want to sort of run with this idea that the universe is elegantly reorganized nothing, that doesn't prove atheism. It can be taken just as much as a basis for wonder at God's creative powers as it does for atheism. Again, I don't think it's a decisive argument either way. It's an idea that in one form or another has gained quite wide currency, and another sort of phrase that's got into this conversation quite widely is from a cosmologist, Alan Guth, who talks about the universe being a free lunch, a similar kind of idea that there is nothing that brings it into being, it just happens. But actually, I think that's not a very satisfying idea. And most scientists are now increasingly assuming that the universe comes out of something that exists before the Big Bang. And of course, this is very speculative, and studying what there was before the Big Bang, even if you can properly talk about what there was before the Big Bang, it is sort of way out of the scope of experimental science. But what most people assume, and I'm not sure I can explain this very well, so don't ask me to afterwards, what most people assume is that there was what's called a quantum vacuum, and a fluctuation happened in this quantum vacuum, and out of that we get the Big Bang and the universe. Well, as I'm admitting, I don't quite understand what a quantum vacuum is. It's not my area of science, let me concede. In my scientific days, when I was working for the Medical Research Council, I was an experimental cognitive psychologist, which is a long way from cosmology. So, I mean, this is not my area of science. But it seems to me that a quantum vacuum is not nothing. And it probably is a lawful state of affairs in some way. And in a way, it must be if a fluctuation in it is capable of producing the Big Bang out of which our universe comes. That is not nothing. It's some kind of lawful state of affairs. So you're sort of pushed back, really, into wondering how we get this quantum vacuum and the apparent lawfulness that means that a fluctuation in it can produce the universe we have. So it's not quite coming out of nothing in the way that Guth suggests with his phrase, a free lunch, and the way Atkins suggests with his phrase, elegantly reorganized nothing. Of course, this idea is not so different from another quite common Christian idea that's often put forward in a Latin form, that God created the universe ex nihilo, a lot of Christian theologians say, and that, I mean, translated into English really just means God created the universe out of nothing. So actually, though I don't think people like Peter Atkins were completely aware of that, in trying to make out an argument for atheism that the universe is just elegantly reorganized nothing, they probably didn't quite realize that they were rephrasing an ancient Christian idea, just as Stephen Hawking was rephrasing a theory that dates back to Augustine. God created the universe ex nihilo. But really what Christians have meant by that, I think, is that God's creation of the universe wasn't dependent on what he found lying around beforehand. They're wanting to move against the idea that this was a God who discovered some kind of chaos lying around and brought it to order. Because if you think of creation in that way, then it seems to make God's creative work dependent on finding some chaotic stuff around out of which he could make something more orderly and fruitful. And Christians have generally not wanted to go with that view of creation, wanted to say that God's creation was absolutely free, that he wasn't dependent on finding anything around, that this happened kind of de novo, ex nihilo, as the theologians say. But actually, I think we come to quite an interesting point of convergence here between what cosmologists are saying about what there was before the universe, this quantum vacuum out of which and in which a fluctuation happened, and what Christians are saying. And there are significant points of agreement here. And I'm largely building on something pointed out by an Oxford theologian, Keith Ward, here. I mean, the point of agreement is that there was something before our present space-time universe, and what there was before was not a space-time world in the way that this is, that there is some reality that is not spatio-temporal, that out of which this space-time world comes. And I think cosmologists and Christians, in their different ways, are both saying that. Christians are saying that this space-time world comes out of a reality, a spiritual reality we call God, who is not constrained by space and time. And cosmologists are envisaging some non-spatio-temporal quantum world out of which this space-time world comes. And there are significant differences there, but there are points of agreement as well. And maybe there's more agreement than might initially seem. Stephen Hawking, in his latest book, is really sort of playing around with this idea of a prior reality out of which this universe comes. And he thought that was an argument for atheism. But again, I'm not sure that it is. I think you can put a Christian spin on that just as easily as an atheist spin. In a moment, I want to go on and talk about the astonishing fruitfulness of the universe, but let me just pause at this point and see if there are any questions or comments before I go on.